Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. A generation before the civil rights movement, over 100,000 Japanese Americans were imprisoned in remote camps across the West. During World War II, over 8,000 men, women, and children were incarcerated at the Topaz relocation camp near Delta, Utah. And joining me now to talk about life as an internee and how art became an outlet for coping with detention, Rick Okabe. His family was interned at the Tula Lake camp in California, and he's been a Topaz board member for the past 15 years. And Rick, thanks very much for your time this morning.
Good to be here.
Also with us, Steve Koga, a resident of Ogden and a board member of the Topaz Museum, and his mother was interned at Topaz. And Steve, thanks to you for your time.
Thank you.
Also with us, Wendy Hassan, an art specialist with Utah Division of Arts and Museums. Wendy, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And a public reception for the traveling art exhibit, Topaz, Artists in Internment, Their Visual Work and Words, will be held tomorrow night from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Rio Gallery. That's 300 South Rio Grande Street here in Salt Lake City. We'll have more information on our website, kcpw.org. If you have questions about life or art at Topaz, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Let's start with you, Steve Koga. Your mother was sent to Topaz, but she didn't tell you much about her experience. Why not?
Very little of that generation even talks about that, things like that. A lot like the World War II veterans, you didn't get them to open up until about 10, 15 years ago. And my mother died in 1995 and left us with virtually nothing. Every once in a while, she would make a reference to the camp. That's how they referred to internment, is the camp. And from a conceptual standpoint, as a child, you understood very little. You knew that they got moved somewhere. You knew that they spent some time somewhere. You had no idea why this happened or where they went.
Hmm. But it wasn't alive to you. You never went to Topaz with her, did you?
No, I did not. No, I was not born then. That was 10 years before I was born. So,
And later in life, she didn't take you there and reminisce or...
Well, we went back after the Topaz Museum organization was founded and they acquired some of that property, and JACL put up a monument out there at the camp. We went back and visited, but she had very little emotional connection to the camp after that. And I have a lot of theories about that. Different religions accepted the camp, their camp life, in different ways. And it's funny how the different people who were interned actually coped with that internment after the internment years. So,
you've devoted yourself to learning a lot about what life was like there, though. What's your motivation?
Well, my motivation, and I don't really know all that much about how much life was at camp. We surmise these days what life was like. But my real devotion is because of the act of internment. And you just had some civil rights people on, and that's the crux of internment, is civil rights. You had the second time in American history where civil rights were suspended for American citizens. First, you had during the Civil War in slavery, and second, Japanese internment. That is the only times in American history that civil rights has been wholesalely suspended for a whole class of people.
Rick Okabe, your family was interned in California. Did your family talk about it?
No, my experience is fairly similar to Steve's. I put this as a cultural trait of the Japanese community. That there's a term called shigatakanai, which is more of a we will endure hardship with a quiet determination. And so growing up, my parents never talked about what happened in the internment camps. I never heard them express any anger or frustration or these kinds of emotions towards the government. It was once they got out of the camp, they wanted to put it behind them. They moved to Chicago, where I was born and raised, and went on with their lives. It was their way of dealing with a very traumatic experience.
Hmm. And so what brought you to learn about Topaz, to learn about what people had to endure during their detention?
Well, I moved to Utah in 1990, and I met Jane Beckwith, who is the founder and president of our Topaz Museum Board. And when I realized that I was only 2.5 hours away from one of the 10 internment camps across the country, I decided to get involved on behalf of my family, my parents, my grandparents. I had aunts and uncles that were all interned in a camp. And so, again, like Steve, I wanted to make sure that this unprecedented suspension of civil rights, where 120,000 people of Japanese ancestry, 70% were U.S.-born citizens, they had civil rights denied. They were put in prison camps for 3.5 years. They were not given any access to lawyers. They were not given any trials. In fact, they were not even charged with any crime. And after the 3.5 years, not one person that had been put in these camps was ever convicted or even charged with any crime or act of sabotage.
Hmm. We're speaking about life at Topaz, the internment camp near Delta, Utah, during World War II. Rick Okabe's family was in a similar camp in California. He's a member of the Topaz Board of Directors, also with a Steve Koga, whose mother was interned at Topaz, and Wendy Hassan, an art specialist with the Utah Division of Arts and Museums. A new exhibit, a traveling exhibit of art generated during Topaz, will be unveiled tomorrow night from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Rio Gallery. It's fascinating to me that, not much of the physical camp remains. You know, the guard towers, the barbed wire, even the barracks are gone, most of them. So life did go on, though. I mean, it, for all intents and purposes, this was a prison, and yet life did go on. In Topaz, I understand about 800 detainees took art classes. Why do you think so many of these folks decided to find a place in art and artistic expression? Steve Koga?
Probably because they didn't know how to play baseball or play basketball. There's probably a myriad of number of reasons why they became artists. And some of it's just to fill time, some of it's to relieve stress, some of it's expression, you know, as a form of media. Who knows what the reasons are that they actually joined the art class. But there were about 800 artists who joined that art school at Topaz.
Mm-hmm. Wendy Hassan, what do we know about the Topaz Art School? Wendy, are you there? Apparently, Wendy is left.
This is Wendy Hassan. I was on the call with Jennifer Napier Pierce, and the line.
Wendy, you're here. Okay, we'll work that out. What do we know about the art school at Topaz, Rick Okabe?
Well, it was founded by a professional artist, Chiro Obata, who was an artist in Japan and then moved to California and was actually an assistant professor at UC Berkeley before the war. And when he got to Topaz, he realized that with 8,000 people behind barbed wire and virtually nothing to do, that art classes could be a way to take up some time and to help the internees themselves deal with the experience of Topaz. And so the people who took the classes came from all walks of life. They weren't necessarily artists, and in fact, they were laborers or gardeners or people who had ordinary jobs. And it turns out, after they left camp, a lot of them did not continue their artwork. So it was a way to deal with the stress and the tension of being in the internment camps.
Mm-hmm. Wendy Hassan, are you there?
I am here.
Okay, great. We were just talking about the art school at Topaz, and Rick Okabe was saying that an artist, Mr. Obata, had founded that school. What else can you tell us about him? He was a scholar from Berkeley?
He was. He was a very popular teacher at the University of California, Berkeley. He actually didn't exhibit his work until he had thousands of pieces and had been shown 80 times before he went into internment, first at the Tanforan Center in California and then at Topaz. One of the first things he did in Tanforan was to establish an art school. It was part of a larger adult education program. And at its height, they had 23 subjects taught by 16 instructors to over 600 internees. So that's a remarkable testament to how industrious and eager for ways to continue to be positive they were. It's a remarkable statement, I think. And it was one of the first things that they did by the time they came to Topaz. I think it was within a few days of arrival that they requested permission to reform the art school.
The images that you can see on display in this new traveling exhibit, what were artists exploring during their time at Topaz?
There are images of Topaz. There's a beautiful moonlight landscape. Some used just the empty landscape without people in it. Others, Mine Okubo particularly, had lots of almost cartoonish renderings of the people in the camp and the day-to-day life in the camp. In fact, she detailed her experiences in a book called Citizen 13660, which is a remarkable glimpse into what day-to-day life was like, and to have that imagery in a really remarkable artist's work. Of course, with 600 students, you know, some of the people in camp were professional artists. Mine was one of those and was recruited out of camp to be an illustrator for Fortune magazine. So her work is exceptional. We have several of her pieces. And their subjects range widely.
It's interesting to me, Rick Okabe and Steve Koga, that your parents chose not to talk about this period in their life. So how hard was it to assemble the art? Did people who painted or drew while they were at Topaz, did they save these pieces of work? And were they eager to show them, or a little bit reluctant, like your parents were, to share the experience? Rick Okabe?
From what I've heard, our president, Jane Beckwith, has done a good job of meeting with internees and former internees and their families who have come to the campsite in near Delta. And invariably, when they realize that the site is still there, you had mentioned that nothing's there. Well, there is still some barbed wire. There is still some concrete foundations, the latrines and the mess halls. And so as a result, we've purchased 600 acres of the original site, and it's now recognized by the National Park Service as a National Historic Landmark, one of 14 in Utah. And so once they realize there is a group here in Utah that is helping to preserve the site, they are more than willing to donate artifacts, paintings, wood carvings to our museum. And so we've developed a collection over the years.
Steve?
Yeah, so they come up happenstance, you know, as people die off and their children go through their belongings, they find something that links them to the internment camps. And so they, our contact is through Jane, because she's the one on our website. So, so that's how we've acquired a great number of the paintings.
Have you seen the exhibit?
I ran through the exhibit right before I came down here this morning, and it's beautiful. It's very beautiful. So, yeah, I encourage everybody to come through there. If they can't make it out tomorrow night, to come through before it closes on February 10th, I think, is it?
That's correct.
And how many artists are represented, Wendy Hassan?
We have 8 artists. There are 2 photographers. Photography was actually cameras were contraband in the beginning because there was some concern about precious information escaping. But there was a professional photographer with the internees, and they got permission to use a dark room. And after some of the tension eased, they were able to acquire a camera. So there are 2 photographs. The rest are images.
Wendy Hassan is an art specialist with the Utah Division of Arts and Museums. Rick Okabe and Steve Koga, board members of the Topaz Museum. A public reception for the traveling art exhibit Topaz, Artists in Interment, Their Visual Work and Words, will be held tomorrow night from 6 to 9 p.m. at the Rio Gallery, 300 South Rio Grande Street here in Salt Lake City. And you can find more information on our website, kcpw.org. Rick Okabe, Steve Koga, and Wendy Hassan, thanks very much for your time today.
Thank you.
City Views is a production of KCPW News in Salt Lake City. Thanks to Tamara Kemsley. Our technical directors, Jesse Ellis and Ryan Cron, composed our theme music. Next time, it's Politics Up Close with Jeff Robinson, so join us for that discussion tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.